Good morning, ma'am. Would you state your name and your ADC number for the record? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Would you state your name and ADC number for the record, please, ma'am?
Tasha Finley, 104338.
Okay, thank you so much, Ms. Finley. You're appearing for the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for your hearing today. Inasmuch as you have been certified by the Department of Corrections for a 412A, that is general parole, or 411, absolute discharge, or home arrest. And as you can see, ma'am, we have five board members participating in your hearing today, and I would like to introduce them to you at this time. And they are to my right, which would be to your left, is the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. To my right, your left, would be the Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis. To my left, the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. And to his left, the Honorable Mr. Neil David Neal. My name is C.T. Wright. I'm serving as your panel chair as well as chair of the board today. I'm going to just make a few comments and then I'm going to let you talk or your attorney, because you do have an attorney present today, and we give the option, whoever you wish to speak first, it can either be you or your attorney, but we will ask you that after I make just a few comments about information that's been provided to the board by the Department of Corrections.
Okay.
I do take note that you're currently serving one sentence, and that is for murder in the first degree. And the date that it started was back on February the 19th, 1993. And you will become eligible on February 19, 2018. That means that if this board saw fit to parole you today, or absolute discharge, or home arrest, it would not become effective until February 19, 2018. We cannot do it prior to your becoming eligible for parole. Do you understand that, ma'am?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Although you have one offense, I do take note that in the past that you had four other offenses, but they have all expired. Therefore, we're only looking at one, and that's the murder first degree. Is that also your understanding, ma'am?
Yes, sir.
And I would also point out the fact that most recently you did have one discipline back in 2015 and one in 2014, violation of sanitation in 15, that was a minor, and possession of theft or possession in 2014. Do you remember what those minors were about? They were not majors, they were reduced to a minor. Do you remember what they were about, ma'am?
I remember one, sir.
And which one would that be, may I ask?
That sanitation one?
Yes, ma'am. What was that one about then? Please go ahead.
I washed my clothes and got a ticket.
Okay. And so they gave you a ticket for washing your clothes?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm going to ask everybody just to hold on. I'm to make a phone call. And so let me make this phone call at this time to see if we can find Ms. McNeely at this time.
Hello?
Yes, may I speak with Ms. Mary Carmack-Neely, please?
This is her.
Yes, this is the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, and it's our understanding that you wish to participate in the hearing for your niece this morning, Ms. Finley. Am I correct? Okay, I'm going to ask if you would just hold on, and we will call on you at the appropriate time. We are just now going through some of the preliminaries regarding Ms. McNeely, regarding Ms. Finley at this time. So we will continue with some of them as we move forward. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, you want to get them for me?
Sure.
Okay.
And your monitor, the lobby's off.
Okay, so what do we do to get the normal lobby on?
Should
family?
All of them.
Let's do this.
I'll send you a tiny bit out.
Okay, let's, that's just that one.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's try waiting room, waiting room.
We're just having a few technical issues, so just hold on.
Oh, no, I have, please, you're doing this.
I was talking to the people in the room, we have some, and we have one person on the phone, so connect.
Okay.
Okay, so, ma'am, we're going to be calling in another number, so I'm going to put you on hold for a moment, okay?
Oh, okay, thank you.
Hi, you've reached the office of Sarah Wolf with Maricopa County Attorney's Office. She is unavailable to take your call, but if you leave your name and number, she will call you as soon as she returns. If this is an emergency, please hang up and dial 602-506-5780. Thank you.
Ms. Wolf, this is the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, and the board is about to commence a hearing that we understand you wanted to participate in, Finley. Please contact the office when you get this number, and we can connect you into the hearing, 602-542-5656. Thank you.
Ms. McNeely, are you back on?
Yes, I am.
Okay, just hold on. We're just having a few technical issues, and we will be moving forward.
All right, take your time.
Yes, ma'am.
Let me make sure I got the other one off.
Okay, and we have a technical issue back here for the board.
Okay, long, if you disconnect me, long as you call me back.
Yes, ma'am, we will call you back. I have your number.
Oh, okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay, we'll make sure.
Okay, we may have to shut everything down and start over.
Okay, so I'm going to ask everybody just to hold with patience because we have a technical problem in the back of the room as it relates to that stream. So I'm going to cut everything off, and then we're going to start all the way back over in terms of our technical issues. So just hold on.
Okay, do you have to call me back? Or?
No, ma'am. I'm just speaking to the people in the room, not you. So just...
Oh, okay.
Yes, ma'am. So just hold on.
Okay.
Few seconds.
Do
I think we have enough seconds? Okay, well, I'm going to move on. The board members will be looking at the smaller screens. We usually look at the large ones behind you, but we won't be looking at that one due to some technical issues. So that one, that's just letting it down, up and down, so that has nothing to do with. Okay, so we're going back to Perryville, and we're going to ask everybody to just hold on, and we will use we'll go back to Perryville.
I think we're getting back.
Oh, there it goes. I'm just coming up slow.
Back at Perryville, and Finley should be on the line. Okay, Ms. Finley, we're back. We were having some technical issues on our end, but now we are back and we will continue your hearing. Okay, as we were just going over some of the preliminaries just for information, and I won't start over, I will just continue. I would point out the fact that according to information that's been provided to the board and from Ames, this is your first time appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. Am I correct, ma'am?
Yes, sir.
And we want to take this opportunity to welcome you to the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. I had already introduced you to the board members. I would point out the fact that I'm just going to give just a brief summary, and please tell me, you or your attorney, whether the information that I'm going to provide at this time is correct, and it's going to be just a very brief summary. The information that I've gleaned and by reading information that's been presented to the board, and I would point out to you that the board has received all of your documentation. We have all of these documents pertaining to you today, and the board members have had an opportunity to read all of them and to review all of them. Therefore, what I'm going to say is going to be very brief, and I'm just going to sum it up very briefly. And that is, on February 12, 1993, you and three co-defendants entered the victim's apartment. The door was already unlocked. You went in. You covered your faces, and you had on gloves as well. And the purpose of your entering the apartment was to commit a robbery. And then one of your co-defendants, a male defendant, Mr. Jones, grabbed the victim, while another co-defendant took the victim roommate into the hallway. And then you went into, ma'am, Ms. Finley, you went into the bedroom to search for money and drugs, according to the pre-sentence report. And while you were out of the room, a couple of the co-defendants took the victim down to the floor and kind of was on top of her. Then you returned, and upon returning, then according to information I gleaned, then you were on top of her, and then the gun went off. And according to the witnesses, then it was at that point that you admitted that, I believe you admitted, you can correct me on that, that you are actually shot, that you had actually shot the victim. You found out later, as well as others found out later, that 4 days later, the victim had been murdered. And that's where we are, and that's why we are here with you today. We also just point out, just for the record, that on March 30th, 1993, you were remanded to adult court, and on January 26, 1994, you were found guilty by a jury, and we said not only of the murder, but for other counts that have already expired. We also take note that you did appeal your case to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals did affirm the findings of the jury. We also take note that you have in a number of letters of support that board members have had an opportunity to review. We also have a letter from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office objecting to your being released. I also take note that at the time of the pre-sentence report, you had restitution of $3,735.09. I'll just start there. Have you paid anything on the restitution yet, ma'am?
No, sir.
Okay. Okay, now I need to interrupt again. We need to try to make another phone call. So just hold on.
Yes.
And for the individual on the phone, if you'll just hang on, please, okay?
Yes.
Yes, Ms. Wolf. This is the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, and we would like to connect you into the Finley hearing at this time.
Okay, thank you.
All right, just a moment.
The APS chief. You requested.
Mark Harris.
Is this correct?
Come on.
I'm having trouble here.
Okay, here we go. Do I have Ms. Wolf on the line? Let's do it again. Who's on the other end? We've both lost them both. Miss McNeely? We've lost them all. Okay, we're going to have to redial. Okay, Ms. Wolf?
Hi.
Hi there. We're going to put you on hold while we connect another call, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Yes, Ms. McNeely?
Yes.
All right, it's the Board of Executive Clemency. Just to hang on the line, we're going to connect everyone in.
Yeah, I thought I was getting a lot of voicemails, and that's all there is, no.
Yeah, hang on. All right, hang on.
Okay.
Ms. McNeely?
Yes.
Ms. Wolf?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so very much. What we've done so far, we've gone over some of the preliminaries for purpose of Attorney Wolf and Ms. McNeely, and we had just gone over a brief summary of the offense itself. And at this time, I'm going to ask Ms. Finley if you want to respond to questions that I might have or that board members might have, or do you wish at this point for your attorney to speak on your behalf at this point?
I would like to speak too.
Okay. And then you can tell me when you want your attorney to speak on your behalf. Now, I gave what I consider to be a brief summary, less than a paragraph, about the offense itself. Was the information that I gave, was it correct, incorrect, or is there any that you need to add or delete, ma'am?
No, it's correct, sir.
Okay, well, thank you so very much. So at this time, I'm going to ask you a few questions, and other board members will have an opportunity to speak with you and ask you questions as well. And just for the process, at this point, we're going to talk to you and or your attorney. That will be followed by our requesting your supporters to speak. That will be followed by asking if there are any victims present and or the county attorney to speak. And then at that point, we will give you and or your attorney an opportunity to make a final statement to the board. After that, the board will go into discussion right here. We do everything in public. Nothing is done behind closed doors. The board will discuss it, then make its decision, and that will be reported. And once that decision is announced, then the hearing will be over. I just want to go over the process. So now, we just want to ask you some questions so that we can see. Okay, so according to information that I just read, now, when you actually went to that apartment, you actually went there for the purpose of robbing. Did you go there with you and your co-defendants, did you go there with the intent of committing a murder, or you were just there for robbery purposes, ma'am?
We were just there for robbery, sir.
And what went wrong, do you think? I know you had a number of years to think about it, so why, how did it end up turning into a murder?
When we went with Serena Jones, we were struggling and the gun just went off.
And may I ask, and we're just trying to get to know you and just kind of introduce, you know, we're just regular citizens, the five board members are. So, but why did you have a gun on you, ma'am, when you went into the apartment?
I guess to scare him.
Okay. So why did you, I'm assuming, now this is an assumption on my part, why did you pull the gun out? Why didn't you just leave it in your pocket or in your purse, wherever you had your gun? Why did you bring it out, ma'am?
I was trying to scare Star Monica.
Okay. And according to the pre-sentence report, you and your co-defendant was there for robbery for both money and drugs. Was you there for money and drugs or just for money when you went in to rob the victim?
I don't know what she had. I was just going by what Tariqa Conway was saying, that she had money.
Okay. And according to what I bring, there were four, am I correct? No, three co-defendants plus yourself. Am I correct?
Yes, sir. You're correct.
And so who would have been the, maybe that's the wrong word, but who would have been the leader of the four of you when you went in there? Who was in charge? Who suggested that you would go and commit the robbery?
Teresa Conway.
And why did y'all follow that person? That co-defendant?
I couldn't tell you. I think for myself, I didn't want people to think I was a punk or scared or, I don't know, I just wanted to fit in, I guess.
Okay. And at the time, how old were you at the time of the offense?
17.
You were 17, but then you were tried as an adult, am I correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I would also just, you know, you've been incarcerated these low many years, and of course you did have the two minor tickets, but other than that, you know, recently you have not had any tickets, but in the past you had a number of tickets. So what were going on in the past? Why did you have so many tickets in the past, ma'am? I know not recently, but you had a number of tickets. In fact, you had 34 tickets in the past.
And, yes, sir.
So what was going on in the early part when you were arrested, I mean when you were incarcerated?
In the beginning, I was young. I had an attitude where I didn't care, and I was just, I don't know, getting tickets.
So at what point did you change, or that you feel that you changed, that I'm going to be a different person? And initially, I agree that you didn't care, but at some point you kind of changed your mind. So when did that happen, ma'am?
It happened when, I don't know, something just clicked, and I decided, hey, I didn't want to be that person that brought me to prison. I needed to change.
Do you have a feel whether that was 5 years, 10 years, 15 years ago? Do you have a feel when that might have happened?
That was like 15 years ago.
Okay. And did anything in particular happen? You know, when we talked to some inmates, they said that they had, you know, something was revealed to them, or they had death in their family or something. Did anything happen that made you want to change at that point, or you just changed your mind at that point, ma'am?
I just changed my mind.
Okay. And after changing your mind, what are some of the things that you've done positive since you've been incarcerated? I mean, we read it, but we'd like to hear from you. We'd like you to tell us what are some of the things that you've done since you've been incarcerated?
Well, since I've been incarcerated, I got my GED. I did all the real Toronto classes that they offered here. I got an associate's, two of them. Been on my job for a long time. I did everything that a person could do to better their
child. And you spoke of your job. What's your job there at DOC and at Perryville? What do you do, ma'am?
I work at the print shop.
Okay.
I work in Type A.
Okay.
It consists of everything has to go through me to get printed. Design, type setup, stuff, whatever they need, it goes to me.
Now, how did you learn that skill? You know, that's it takes some skill to be able to do that, and for them to have confidence in you, for everything to go through you. So how did you learn those skills, ma'am?
I taught myself.
Oh, that's great.
2 years?
Yes, ma'am. And we have a number of your supporters present, and today we're going to get to them shortly. But who's been the closest to you among your supporters since you've been incarcerated, ma'am?
My mama, my family.
Okay. And who's on your visitors list? You don't have to tell everybody, because I guess you have a whole list of people, but
yeah.
How many people you have on your visitors list, ma'am?
My mother, my sister, my father, my auntie, nieces.
Okay. And when the last time someone visited you since you've been incarcerated?
2 weeks ago.
A few weeks ago, yes, ma'am. And I do take note, the board does have a copy of your progress report that you submitted to the board through the Department of Corrections. And I do note that you had a number of programs, and you've named some of them, but are there any programs in particular that you felt that was most helpful to you in preparing you if you are released by this board? Any other programs that stick out in your mind at this time, ma'am?
Yeah, I did, at church they did, celebrate recovery that helps you dig deep to bring out the issues that got you to where you were. That was a good program.
Have you had any programs dealing with your reentry into society, reentry into the community? Have you had any programs to prepare you to come out and be a productive citizen, ma'am?
I'm doing SOAR right now, where they help you, teach you how to balance money, all those type of things.
Okay. And I do take note on your progress report that you indicated that if you're released that you wish to reside with your sister. Why did you select your sister as where you would want to reside when you're released, ma'am?
She's a good support. I know she'll keep me on the right track.
And I do take note that one reason that you did not want to reside with your mother was because of housing. Am I correct there?
Yes, sir.
And when you are released, what would your plans be? You know, specifically, you say you want to reside with your sister. Would you find employment, or would they help you with financially? What exactly would you want to do out in the community, ma'am?
Yes, I would love to work. My attorney, I have employment when I leave.
Okay. So they've already identified an appointment for you already?
Yes, sir.
They have confidence in you, don't they?
Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am. So, let me ask this question. You know, some of the questions that I ask, you know, that may not make sense to anybody. Maybe sometimes they don't make sense to me. But do you have confidence in yourself?
Yes, sir. I do.
How can you tell this board that you have confidence in yourself, ma'am?
Because how do I tell you that? Because I trust in God that He's going to lead me in the right direction. I got a lot of good support that's going to help me to be a productive citizen out there.
And you say you're going to be a productive citizen. So let's say, and I just asked this question, and I know there's not a real answer to it, but let's say 2 or 3 years from now, if you are released by this board, what do you plan to do? I mean, who do you plan to be? What do you plan to do in life? I mean, you're just, 42 years of age at this time, so you have a whole life before you. So what would you plan? What would be some of your plans for the future, ma'am?
I plan to get a job in my field that I do. And friend
shop,
and I
plan to get to know my family again. Okay. Let me ask this, and we usually ask this to males who are incarcerated, but do you have any close male friends, you know, like fiancés, anything like that?
No, sir.
Okay. So you'll come out fresh and just ready to be a productive citizen.
Yes, focus.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, I'm going to see if board members might have any questions for you at this time. Board members, anywhere from the instant offense itself until where we are today, rather than just dividing them up, the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Ms. Finley, you were very young when you committed this crime. What would you say is the biggest difference in you from then to now? What's the biggest thing that's different about you?
I can say I'm not a follower. I'm a leader now. I'm not easily led into doing things that I'm not supposed to do.
Okay, all right, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Wright.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Rittenhouse. Any further questions at this time? Honorable Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Rittenhouse, when this incident occurred, how did you wind up the person with the gun?
I brought it with me.
So it was your gun?
Yeah.
And where did you get the gun from?
One of the boys gave it to me out there.
One of the boys that was involved in it, or just somebody else?
No, sir.
Okay.
Somebody else.
Okay. So did they know you had the gun with you at that time?
No, they didn't. No, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Finley.
Thank you. The Honorable Mr. Kamornis, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Board Chairman. Ms. Finley, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I just have one question, and I want to be careful how I state it, because I'm not trying to identify new charges. But when you were young, or the time that you were involved with this crime, were you surrounded by a lot of bad influence, violent culture? What was your life like then?
I was surrounded by all that, around the gang. I lived on 7th Avenue in Buckeye. I was surrounded by the gang members.
Were you part of that gang?
No, I hung around them though.
So, I think we already asked this, but I know the board chairman asked you this, but when do you really think that you turned a corner in your life inside the correction system? Because it looks like somewhere along the way there was a change in you, and what do you think really happened? What do you think caused that positive change?
Like I told Mr. Wright, it came to me a point where I didn't want to be that little kid that brought me in here. I knew I had to change to better myself, to be an example for my nieces and nephews, so they wouldn't go down the same road to ours.
I appreciate that, ma'am. Also, I think there was probably some involvement with drugs when you're young. Were you able to stay off drugs inside the correction system? Because we know they're available.
Yes, I haven't did no drugs in there.
I appreciate that. Thank you, ma'am. No further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kamalis. Honorable Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Finley, I just had one other question, because you have done some remarkable things, but I want to go back to how did that relate when you first got incarcerated? Because in the pre-sentence report, in a statement that you made in there, you did state that you wanted to do the minimum sentence that you could actually do or participate in the shock incarceration program. And then you said that you would learn the responsibility and how important life is in the future that you did. You did what you said earlier when you first got, before you got sentenced. You said that you wanted to obtain your GED to make something of yourself, and you intended to stop using drugs and try to stay out of trouble. So that was apparently a goal of yours at the beginning, after prior to getting sentenced. That's still a goal you have accomplished, and got your GED, and you've gone to community college. Is that still, you know, your goal, or did that kind of reflect back on you on what you said you wanted to do while you were incarcerated?
No, it's still my goal. I still got a lot of work to do, and I believe I'm going to accomplish everything I put my mind to.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions by board members at this time? Seeing and hearing none at this time, the board members will have an opportunity later to raise questions based upon an agreement between the attorney and myself. I was going to yield to the attorney, and the attorney will introduce herself as well as those who will be speaking on behalf of the on behalf of Ms. Finley. So would you come up and introduce yourself first by name and so forth, and then tell me who's coming first, second, third, fourth, fifth, because I see so many is here. Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely. Good morning. My name is Molly Briscus, and I'm an attorney who's representing Tasha Finley pro bono today. Thank you for having me here and allowing me to address the board. We've submitted many materials, and so we won't I won't go over all of those to show what Tasha has been doing with her life to make up for that single minute that ended the victim's life and altered her and her codependent's lives forever. And one thing that I think Tasha has not addressed that has come up many times in our meetings together is her feelings about the crime. And when she was only 17, she submitted a letter to the sentencing judge expressing remorse for what she had done, which I think is significant because many people at that age don't have the presence of mind or are only thinking about themselves in that circumstance. In addition, Tasha has trouble getting through a conversation about that night without openly weeping. So I think if Tasha, if I can turn it back to Tasha to talk about her feelings about what she did and how she's tried to atone for that. First, Your Honor, or not Your Honor, but first, Mr. Wright, if that would be okay. Can I turn it back to Ms. Finley?
Yes, ma'am. I was going to let the supporters that you might have to come up, if they might want to come up at this time. But I did want to ask you a question.
Yes.
I'm assuming that this was yours. It might be Ms. Finley's. So why did you select, or why did Ms. Finley select that quotation from Dr. Benjamin Mays to put in as an introduction to this, to her parole package?
Your Honor, I think to highlight the fact that her crime was just 1 minute of her life, and that the past 25 years, the time that she's amassed, she has used every single minute that she possibly could to a good purpose and trying to further herself. She has had to be tenacious in her goals, because many opportunities were foreclosed to her because of her sentence that she received, and because there was not a lot of programming when she first started, when she first was housed at the Santa Cruz unit. She found mentors, she found someone in particular, a liaison between Rio Salado College and the prison, who helped her navigate. And she kept applying. She would apply and apply and apply, even after she was rejected from certain programs or from certain educational opportunities. She has worked, Tasha downplays it a little bit, but she has worked for 17 years at the Perryville print shop. She has worked hard, has gained the esteem of her employers. She has achieved she's gotten two associate's degrees through Rio Salado College. Even she made the dean's list several times. Even though she reached that goal, she continues to take community college classes each semester because of her love of learning and because of her just insatiable desire to keep learning, to keep bettering herself. She participated in the Humanities Behind Walls program, which had a profound impact on her. You'll hear a little bit more about that later. She wasn't just a participant in that program. She became a co-facilitator of several of those classes, and she helped spearhead an effort in Santa Cruz Unit with that program and with DOC to create a learning hub, which was a clearinghouse, sort of a clearinghouse place where other inmates could get advice and help about how they could pursue the different educational opportunities that were available in the unit. I think that speaks to how she's going above and beyond what she can and taking advantage of these programs. Tasha has worked very hard at building and maintaining a community inside the walls of the prison over 25 years. That community will expand beyond the walls if she is released. That's community members, that's church worshipers. She's been going to church through the First Baptist Church at 19th and 7th, 19th and Roosevelt. They've been coming and doing services in Perryville for decades, and Tasha has been attending those, and she has a mentor in that church that will help her transition to the outside. I think that her disciplinary record, the tickets that she picked up at an early age and throughout the years, don't reflect her time inside. And none of those tickets are for anything such as a violent act, no drug infractions, no gang affiliations, no major infractions. They're for very low level, mostly for having an item like a hard-boiled egg. I pulled out some examples in my memorandum. That I don't think that disciplinary reflects her what she has actually done with her time.
Can I just ask you another question,
yes,
ma'am?
Absolutely.
Well, only reason I ask you about Dr. Mays because most people don't even know that Dr. Mays even existed, and that really surprised me. I knew Dr. Mays personally, former president of Morehouse College in Atlanta, and was a very influential person in the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. But you indicated when you introduced yourself that you're doing this pro bono. How did you get involved with Ms. Finley, ma'am?
Your Honor, I've represented several juvenile offenders that have received life without parole sentences, and so I have been involved in the Justice Project through my work on litigating those cases. And Puente, who will speak later, who's involved in the Humanities Behind Walls program, reached out to me when Ms. Finley's case was coming up for review and asked if I would help. And I eagerly joined on because I was kind of swept away by Ms. Finley's record, and because I'm very familiar with the, and I touched upon this in my brief a little bit, about the medico-legal principles that children are different when it comes to the criminal justice system. And that is, I know this board has received information about that before, but when, in particular for this hearing, for a parole hearing, when the Supreme Court was examining neuroscientific medical data, psychological data, psychiatric data, and looking at brain imaging of teenagers' brains, they focused on several factors that made children different. But one factor in particular I think is important in the parole context, and that is children have a unique ability to change that their adult counterparts in the system perhaps don't have. And I think to see Tasha as someone who has undergone a significant change and become the person that she was meant to be through inside the prison walls. And so I think that that's an important backdrop to this hearing, the idea that children are not fixed in time, but they can undergo meaningful change. And I hope that the materials that we provided have shown the profound change that Tasha has undergone during her 25 years of incarceration.
We're going to give you an opportunity to sum things up at the end, but who do you wish to come up and speak as a supporter first?
Yes, I would like to call Alan Gomez, who's Arizona State University's Humanity Behind the Walls program co-director.
Okay, Professor Gomez. Good morning, sir. Would you state your name for the record?
Good morning. My name is Dr. Alan Gomez. I'm an associate professor in the School of Social Transformation at ASU at Tempe campus. First of all, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. You've read my letter, I'd imagine, so I don't want to repeat about that, but I wanted to just emphasize a few things. Tasha's very humble, and as her lawyer mentioned, she often doesn't talk about all the things that she does, and I wanted to emphasize two things. We've been at Perryville for about 7 years on different guards. I've been in Santa Cruz for the past 2 years, and we do everything from philosophy, history, theater, creative writing. It's a broad range of courses that we offer. And we started this project with Karen Hellman at the very, very beginning before she was in charge of this new reentry in part of the DOC. And so from the very beginning, it was very integrated into kind of some of the goals that the DOC had. When we got to Cruz, and after we started these classes, Tasha, along with Ms. Finley, along with many of the other children sentenced to life without parole, wanted to create something for the for other students. And so the way that this learning hub emerges was really through conversations with other students there at Santa Cruz to take Rio Salado classes or take art classes to kind of see what could be developed to kind of as a clearinghouse for learning. So to me, I've written hundreds of letters of recommendations for students over the years here. I used to teach at Cornell, and seeing sort of this the arc of maturity and what is necessary for folks to be successful. And one of the things that I always focus on is how the impact that student has on other student learning. And Tasha's, Ms. Finley's a mentor, and particularly a mentor to younger folks coming in. And I think that moment of being able to share your story and the impact that, that the transformation has had, to be able to share that with others has been really significant. And so, Ms. Finley has made herself anew. And I think that it's obvious by both the support that she has from her family, the community, the already established job, but also the way that she's transformed what ASU does at Santa Cruz. And as you've seen in her file, she has over 133 credits. She could enter ASU if this was her choice to do a liberal arts BA, which is a program that was developed out of NYU and ASU now has, to have folks be able to kind of create their own BA. And I think that Ms. Finley's experience would lend itself to something in that imaginative way. So in my department, we started by to support her by doing a program of study within the department and to begin to have that conversation about what it would mean for a department to also support someone that's been inside for such a long period of time. So I just wanted to sort of emphasize to those three points, her continued participation, particularly as was pointed out, the challenges as someone tends to life without parole to even get into classes, but this development of the learning hub in terms of really wanting to recognize the importance of having a space of learning and transform. And then finally, that ASU and my department, the School of Social Transformation, are available to do whatever we can in terms of mentoring and supporting from what she gets out.
Thank you so much, Doctor. Questions? Honorable Mr. Gomez?
Yes. Are you part of an organization that has some of supporters in the room today?
Yes, there are some of the volunteers are in the room.
Thank you.
To teach our class today.
And just let me gather myself for a second. As far as the support of your organization, is your organization selective? Meaning, if you thought an individual was represented a continuing threat to society, whether they're inside the prison system or outside, would you still support their case?
I'm here because we know Ms. Finley from classes. And so I think that the answer is that if we know folks from before, that would make the decision. And then that would allow insight to sort of get at the answer to your question.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Any further questions? Okay. Yes, Honorable Mr. Neal.
Just clarification about you and what you do. You and your organization don't focus just on the offenders that were tried and convicted when they were juveniles. It's across the spectrum. But the people you help, once you start helping them, they have to show some initiative in doing, and they have to help themselves for you to continue helping, right?
Definitely.
Okay. That's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just had a follow-up question. I that's why I delayed for a second, and there was something else I wanted to ask, and it was kind of broad because I recognize that there were several supporters, but I think you and the attorney both mentioned life without parole. So have you supported cases that were natural life cases for juveniles?
No.
I only say that because this is obviously a case that's life with parole. So you both said life without parole.
What I was referring to is kind of the designation that has been more common before the Alabama Miller cases.
Okay. Right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Who should we have next?
Next, if
Jovana
Renteria could approach. She will talk about Tasha's reentry plan and show a short video as well that we prepared.
Okay. Good morning.
Yes, ma'am. Would you state your name for the record?
Giovanna Renteria.
Yes, ma'am. And what do you want to tell the board, ma'am?
So, basically what we're doing here today, I'm going to state her Ms. Finley's re-entry plan and what we've been doing out here for Ms. Finley. We have a couple of job offers on the table if she is released. We have Emily from the Coronado restaurant that is present here today and willing to give her a job. We have Stephanie from Fair Trade that also will give her employment. Throughout this time of employment, she will get benefits, but we do have a medical clinic that is willing to handle all her medical needs within this period of time. We have a couple of UU church representatives and that are here today with us as well. And we have asked Wendy a couple of community services that we provide as well. We're willing to provide 3 months of bus tickets and routes for Ms. Finley so she can get to and from work. We also have a youth empowerment mentorship program that whenever she's ready and wants to come in, she can also do that. Where, as you can see, Ms. Tasha is a woman of few words, but strong action. That's why you can see a lot of us here today. We want to make sure that Ms. Finley, Tasha, has everything that she needs to re-enter, to be successful, and back into our community, to be a positive and productive member of our own, of our community. So I'm asking you to take all this into consideration when you make your decision. I also have a short video if you guys want to see that as well.
Okay, how short, ma'am?
It's like 5-8 minutes.
Okay, as long as it's short, yes,
it's
ma'am.
Short, yeah.
Tasha witnessed the same things that I've witnessed as far as the crimes and the drugs growing up as a youth and a teenager. Growing up with Tasha, she was this energetic person who always wanted to be a professional dancer. And also, she was very caring and loving and understanding. She knew that my mother was a single mother in poverty and didn't have a lot of income, so rather than asking her for money for things that she wants, Tasha will go to the neighbors and take out their trash or wash their dishes in order to receive income for things that she needed outside of what my mother provided for.
So I'm Tamisha Carthen, and I'm a third grade teacher at Bethune School. Going to the school in the 80s and 90s, our opportunities, we weren't supposed to have any. We came from parents doing drugs. Two of my sisters was born on drugs. So we weren't supposed to have any opportunities. And even myself, I went to the local high school. I got pregnant in high school at 16. You know, I'm a survivor type of situation, but I still didn't go to college till I was in my 30s. With the folks that went to our school with me and where they land down in the criminal justice system, a lot are dead. The other half will be arrested. They make up about 75%. There's about 25% that I see now that are doing very well. But the majority of them, they got locked up. But people do change, you know. I've changed. I'm not the same person I was when I gave birth to that first child or even that second child. And so I would say to parole board, there has to be an opportunity for a person to grow, to make a change, to make a move. Keeping somebody confined and educating them but never giving them the opportunity is worthless. It's useless.
That day was like, it was like something just pierced through your heart, just nearly just stopped the, you know, your breath. It was just, I mean, you wanted to just wake up the next day and hope that you're in a dream instead of in a nightmare. And it impacted our family a great deal. So the last 25 years, I've seen my sister grow from a teenager to a woman. And from the teenager, she really didn't care too much for schooling. She had, you know, issues with learning. Now I see her as an adult excelling, and that she's, you know, accomplished her goals and dreams and achieved 2 associate's degrees. And also in her behavior from a teenager to a woman, she thinks things through now in a positive manner, and just a lot of growth and maturity in her. She wants to succeed, she wants to be successful. So everything that she's accomplished there, she looked forward to excelling even further out in the free world with.
It's really most men catching from my lungs, like that oxygen. I have to take that oxygen anywhere I go. And I have to take this inhaler stuff. I had to put it, it's a mask, I had to do that at least once a day. And I got 2 inhalers I had to do at least 3 times a day, twice, 2 pumps, 3 times a day. And then I got that Advil thing, everybody know the Advil. I had to use that twice a day. Whatever I can say is Tasha wants to come on here when you lose weight and get off this oxygen. Because I don't need a push.
My name is Bolea. I'm 6 years old. I go to gym for full busy with my aunt Tasha. Her and I get to come out here and we just get to stay here. It's not fair for her. It's not fair for us if we want her to come back. We can't just force the judge to make her come back. Maybe to my aunt Sasha, I feel sad that her can't come home with me.
Thank you.
And thank you. Questions, board members? Thank you.
What organization did you represent?
Brenda.
Brenda? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. Thank you.
Thank you. To sum up, our final speaker will be Amelia Finley, who Tasha will be living with. She's present. She can answer any questions about the apartment and the living plan, and also just wants to make a short statement.
Thank you. Please come forward.
Hello.
Good morning, and would you state your name for the record?
Yes, I'm doing family.
Okay, what do you want to tell the board today?
Well, I want to tell the board that I want to help my sister in any manner I can, and that she's welcome to come and stay with me. And also, would like to read a poem that I wrote for her.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I'm a poet and hopes to one day have my poetry books published. It's called My Sister Is So Beautiful. My sister and I have a bond as strong as steel. When she hurts, her pain I can feel. as the tears fall down her face. I pray for her to be blessed by God's grace. She's reaching out for freedom and hope. She's battling the life of tug of war. Her hands are tightly gripped on the rope. She has been pulling to win for quite some time, hoping and wishing for a little sunshine. Her days are cloudy and her nights are cold. A deep sorrow she has tried hard to hold. She's so adorable and strong as can be. She has touched the hearts of both her friends and family. She's intelligent with a heart full of love. She's a beautiful creation from the love, the Lord up above. When he created her, he gifted our home with a shining star. Her sparkle shines through, whether near or far. She's so precious in every which way. To bring her joy and happiness, there's no price that I wouldn't pay. For my sister, I'll do any and everything. I wish I could take her from this nightmare into a pleasant dream. She deserves a much better life than this. Moments spent with her, I do miss. She's my one and only sister of pride. When prison took her away, each day I sat and cried. She means so much to me. I long for the moment for her to be free. My sister is so special and beautiful. She's my everything. I love her so.
Thank you. Board members, questions? I do have a question. If you're released, she would be residing with you. Who else is residing in your residence?
Just myself, sir.
Just yourself, okay. So you're interested in her residing with you. I guess that goes without saying, does it not?
Yes.
Okay, and when the last time you seen your sister?
About 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you. Any further questions by board members?
Yes, where do you live at?
On 67th and Bethany.
Okay.
Any further questions? No further questions from board members. Thank you so very
much.
Thank you. Thank you. And good luck with your portrait.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Board members, Tasha Finley was only 17 years old when she committed her awful crime. She has spent the entirety of her adult life.
Just for the record, state your name again.
I'm sorry. Molly Briscus, attorney, yes, on behalf of Ms. Finley. She has made continuous and skilled work. She's made every effort to become educated. She's a peaceful and respected member of the Santa Cruz community. She's turned to faith and family when confronting the hardships and sadness that come with a lifetime behind bars. And she humbly asked this board for release to parole and for the chance to live out amongst her fellow man as a peaceful and loving law-abiding citizen. She has put the pieces in place, a stable home, an honest job, family support, community support, continuous faith-based worship to be successful on the outside. And that concludes Ms. Finley's support. I would like to note there's numerous community members here from her childhood, from La Puente, from ASU, people that Tasha has built relationships with over 25 years inside that look to support and hold her up if she is released. So that concludes Ms. Finley's presentation. If the board would like to hear from her again,
I will reserve that until the end. She
okay.
will have an opportunity to
okay.
speak to the board. Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You.
Thank you. Ms. Matt Neely, are you still on the phone?
Yes, I am.
And you are the aunt, so did you want to make a statement to the board?
I definitely do.
Okay, so would you state your name just for the record?
My name is Mary Carr McNeely.
And what do you want to tell the board today, ma'am?
Well, I could tell the board is my niece was brought up in a very violent and drug-riddled neighborhood. I used to come over all the time to talk to them and tell them you need to change your friends, and I was very worried about them. But I focused more on her older siblings. And so when I heard more about, I said a few things to her, but I talked more to the older siblings. So when I was worried about what she was seeing, but I had no idea she had gotten as involved as the older siblings. So when I would talk to the older siblings about it, when I heard about her crime, I was very shocked because of the type of person she is, because she was always very caring. And I listened to what she said, and I really, truly believe it was an accident, because when I used to come over and talk to them, they would tell me I was a square. So that was kind of like what she said, that she didn't want to become a punk. She wanted to fit in. You know, she was never a bad person. She just wanted to fit in. And when this crime did happen, I felt so bad because I felt like I hadn't done enough. And I feel that if she's released to my niece is a really good positive role model. My niece has gotten to the point where she tried to get all the family, my niece Amelia, tried to get all the family together. She's, you know, she has things on the internet, and she tries to hook us up from all different states. She plans all of our family reunions. I have flown down a couple of times to see her. She expressed, you know, to see my niece in prison, and my niece, Tasha, has told me that she wants to have kids, and I would love for her to one day have children so that I can see my great nieces and nephews. I really believe that it was totally an accident. She spent a lot of time in jail. I would love her to get out. It hurts me to my heart. And all I want for Christmas this year is for you guys to please, please release her. That's all I have to say.
Okay, well, thank you, ma'am. Any questions by board members? No questions by board members. Thank you so very much. Now we're going to move to the victims side. I believe that the victim services had something that you wish to bring forth, bring to the attention of the board. I have a note that I do have.
She's on the phone.
Oh, she's on the phone? Oh, the attorney?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay, Miss.
Are you talking about me?
Yes, Ms. Wolf, Attorney Wolf, at this time we will yield to you, ma'am. And
okay,
please state your name. Please state your name for the record.
Yes, thank you, members of the board, for letting me appear by phone. My name is Sarah Wolf. I represent the state, and I know that you guys have a copy of our letter. But just to follow up on that, I did want to state a few of the reasons why we oppose release of this particular inmate. To reiterate the points in the letter and go over the facts a little bit, this is not just a home invasion that went bad. This was not an accident. This was an intentional crime where the inmate went into someone's home, pulled her from her bed, sat on her chest, and shot her with a gun. So far, there has been nothing that has been presented to this board that there has been accountability taken for the actions of the inmate. I hear a lot of it was an accident. She took a gun to someone's home, sat on her chest, and a gun is not something that goes off by itself. It's something that takes an intentional act to do. She pulled the trigger and she took another person's life. Again, within the letter, I know it goes over the fact that the victim was sleeping when the inmate and her co-defendants entered the apartment, that they were searching for money, that they had gloves on, and that they had their faces covered, and that after the shot went off, that they all ran from the apartment. Several days later, when making contact with police, two of the co-defendants confessed, and at some point, the inmate herself did confess to the crime, but still did not take responsibility for the actual murder. She never took responsibility for taking the life of another person. So, moving on from the facts of the case, as horrible as they are, I'd like to move on that at this time, the inmate is serving a sentence that is already a mitigated sentence. Her age was taken into account at sentencing, the fact that she was 17 years old, despite several aggravating factors. The fact that she was even granted the possibility of release is a mitigating sentence in and of itself. Based on the pre-sentence report, she had gang involvement from the time she was young. This crime was committed with accomplices. It was committed for financial gain. Her history prior to this crime, it shows a pattern that's actually something I would argue has continued throughout her stay in DOC. While being incarcerated, and I think this has been glossed over a little bit, she has committed 34 infractions. So while she has been participating in certain programs, even with all of this help, she is continuing to commit infractions, at least five of which are major violations. Some of these violations include theft, possession of stolen property, possession of contraband, false reporting, smuggling, more theft, disobeying orders. Several things that just demonstrate that at this point, this inmate is not someone who can be released into the community. She's still a danger to the community. She has not demonstrated that she has respect for the law or can follow the law. Again, she already has the advantage of a mitigated sentence. She already has the advantage of concurrent sentences. And I'd like to point out that while there is no victim present in this case, there were victims that did opt in. We do not have good contact information for them. But as a point to represent for the victim, this particular victim doesn't get a chance to make a statement. She doesn't get a chance to argue for her release because she is not alive. She was killed and she got a life sentence and she did not commit a crime. She is not here. Her children, who were present at the time that this crime was committed, are living with the life sentence of not having their mother around. And I think that's something this board has to consider when looking at this case. I noticed that something was said earlier about that this inmate has taken every possible opportunity and used every minute towards a good purpose. But I think the disciplinary infractions and the history while she's been in DOC is something that this board has to consider. And it was only until just recently that she was committing violations. And again, there's 34. This isn't five that have been committed over 24 years. This is 34 violations. That's a lot. So I think that this board should consider that. And I think that you should consider this as her first parole hearing, that the nature of this crime, how it was committed, the fact that she has not taken accountability or responsibility, and that the life sentence imposed and the multiple concurrent sentences imposed are completely appropriate, that her numerous disciplinary infractions and the effect that this has had on the community and the victim and the victim's children, you know, these are the reasons why we object to any possible release of the inmate at this time.
Thank you so very much, Attorney Wolf. Board members, any questions for the County Attorney's Office? The Honorable Mr. Johnson.
I was trying to go back through the file and just look at some things, but I thought I saw something in the file that there was a plea agreement for 10 years. But in order for the plea agreement to go through, all of the defendants would have had to accept the plea agreement, and one of them didn't want to accept it, so therefore they had to go to trial. Is that, am I reading that right?
So, I'm sorry, let me clarify. Your question is that there was a plea agreement to 10 years, but...
There was a plea agreement offered for 10 years, but in order for the plea agreement to apply, all of the defendants involved would have had to apply, would have had to accept that 10-year plea agreement. But because one of the defendants did not want to accept it, that they all had to go to trial.
I would say that that statement is a little inaccurate, only because a defendant who's offered a plea agreement is offered to that particular person. All defendants would not have to agree to take a plea agreement. As far as any plea agreements, and I'm sorry, I am new to this. I recently got the file. I am not aware of any plea agreements that this particular inmate was given, but I do know that she chose to go to trial in this case. She did not testify at that trial. You know, so any plea agreements that would have been offered or any plea agreements to co-defendants really wouldn't have any bearing at this point. So hopefully that answers your question. If not, three people have to agree on a plea agreement. She could have had her own plea agreement if she wanted one, but in this particular case, she chose to go to trial.
Okay, and they were all tried together, is that correct? All the defendants were tried together.
I would have to look at the appellate record on that one to see if all of them were tried together. I believe they were, but I'm pretty sure there was at least one that fled because she testified at the trial.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Any further questions for County Attorney's Office? Hearing no further questions at this time, Ms. Wolf, you're welcome to stay on as the board very shortly will be going into discussion and making its determination. Is there anyone else here for the victim who wishes to come before this board at this time? Seeing no one else to come before this board at this time, Ms. Finley, we're coming towards the end of your hearing. This is your hearing. We want to give you and or your attorney an opportunity to make a final statement to the board before the board goes into discussion and makes its determination whether to grant you general parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. But at this time, do you want to speak first, or do you want your attorney to speak first? We want to give you this opportunity because this is your hearing.
Well, I think I should speak.
Okay, please state your name again just for the record, ma'am.
My name is Tasha Finley.
Yes, ma'am. And what you want to tell the board, ma'am?
I do have remorse. I've never been hurt. So, I've never been for any of this to happen. And so I know if I could take it back, I would. I'm sorry for everything. But I'd like to do is ask for forgiveness. I never meant for it to happen. I didn't mean to shoot her.
Have you finished, ma'am?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Ms. Finley. Attorney, is there a final statement you wish to make on behalf of Ms. Finley before we go into discussion?
No, board members, thank you. If you have any additional questions.
And your name again. I'm sorry to do that.
Molly Briscoe.
Yes, ma'am.
I'll get it. If you have any more questions, I think Ms. Finley has contrary to what the county attorney has stated, she has taken responsibility. The event has haunted her 25 years, and that is why she has taken the steps that she has to try to better herself. We would disagree that she has a bad disciplinary record. She spent over 25 years in jail and was very young when she went in, and she has taken several steps to rehabilitate herself. And that the minor infractions should not speak louder than all of her actions and programs and efforts that she's taken on her own behalf. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. At this time, the board is going into discussion. We want to ask everyone in the room to remain quiet. It may sound like we're talking to Ms. Finley or to those on the phone or to those in this room, but we're not. It's just the five of us talking among ourselves. We are part of the open meeting laws of the state of Arizona. Everything that this board does must be done in public. We as board members, we have not had the opportunity to discuss this among ourselves or with anyone else. This will be the first time that we will have discussed it. And each board member votes independent. Each board member is independent. Each board member has one vote. And at this time, we are going into discussion. We're going to ask that all would remain quiet as we go into discussion. And just before we go into discussion, we're going to ask that we know that this can be emotional. We're going to ask everyone to remain professional. We also would like to point out the fact, once again, that we pointed out before, we're going to ask those of you who are supporting Ms. Finley to exit from this side, and those who are supporting the victims to exit from this side. So we don't want any mix up on that at all. So at this time, the board is going into discussion. Board members, is there a board member who wishes to lead off the discussion at this time? The Honorable Mr. Kavanis.
Thank you, Mr. Board Chairman. As one voting board member, and I'll say as a retired federal agent, I never want to forget that there are victims, victim supporters, who will never get over their trauma, and it's terrible and tragic. But as one voting board member, I believe that a sentence of 25 years to life means two basic things. Either the real possibility of parole, if we can safely return that person to the community and lead a productive and responsible life, or the real possibility of life imprisonment if that individual represents a continuing threat to the public. And I recognize there's a lot of emotion here, as we've confronted many times as a board. But I will just say simply, I'm open to the possibility of supervised release of a either home arrest or general parole option, but that's where I'd like to begin the discussion. And I'm certainly open to the collective wisdom of my peers.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mr. Kavanis. Any other board members? Honorable Mr. Johnson.
Dr. Wright, I want to say, I know I had read that and I was trying to find that they were all tied together and there was a 10-year offer that was actually made, but all four of them had to actually participate in it. And one of the defendants actually took a plea agreement for a lesser time to testify against the other and received, I think, a lesser charge and less time that she received incarcerated as a result of testifying. I just should have took that sheet out when I went across it. However, I'm very familiar with this area during that period of time over there in the Magic Henson Projects over there in the area. I worked that area both as a patrol officer, as a homicide investigator, as a robbery investigator. I'm familiar with all the happenings that went on along Buckeye Road with all the activities that they actually had in that area. I will tell you that I do think that Ms. Bendy has remorse for what occurred, and even in her pre-sentence report in the defendant's statement, she is saying that she's sorry for what she had done. She has learned prior to being sentenced, she had learned the responsibility, how important life is, and she stated back then in her future plans, she plans to obtain her general equivalency of GED and make something of herself. She intends to stop using drugs and try to stay out of trouble. And I think that that's something that she said when she first got incarcerated after she was remanded to adult court. It's in the pre-sentence report that's actually there. I think that as a result of that, that she stayed by her word. I want to say that, you know, not only did I work in that area, but I also worked at the Boys Club in the area, at IG Home Boys Club, at the Valley Christian Center, at Elkhart Park, to put together the first swim team that they had over there at Elkhart Park. I, when I was a patrol officer, I did my first officer friendly programs at Bethune Elementary School, and I still stay involved over there. I'm involved with the Elks Lodge over there in that area. Stay involved over there because I think it has some real historic history for the area over there where African Americans first lived at, in those Matthew Henson projects, and Memorial Hospital over there where some of the first African American children were born, the Catholic church that's there that was responsible and helped help provide some of the information there. I come in contact with several youth over there that got in trouble when they were young and went to prison, and they're out of prison and they're doing very well and trying to make something out of their lives. And when they make that statement, I think this young lady, Ms. Finley, would be an example to some of the young ones who are still living in that area, to show that, you know, not only what happens, but what she can do. And over the 25 years, she's had some disciplinary infractions, and that last disciplinary infraction that she had was she had washed some clothes and hung them in her cell. And that's what she got wrote up for washing the clothes and hanging them up in her cell. I don't know what the plan is, but I think that Ms. Finley is sincere. I think she's served 25 years. She's served the majority of her adult life incarcerated in prison. And even for a person who's not in prison or incarcerated to not have a high school diploma, but goes back and gets your GED, and then goes and gets two degrees from the community college, I think that's, you know, exceptional on what she's done. I think that what occurred during that period of time when she was 17 years old is heinous. Someone's life was taken. I do take that in consideration, that a life was taken at that time. I don't know if she intended to shoot her. At one point in the report, it says that she just shot her in the chest. The other part in the report says the gun went off while she was on top of her. But I do think that this young lady has served her time in there, and being familiar with that area. But that's not just familiar with that area. It's just very personal to me. I haven't had the opportunity to deal with several young people in that area, and to see what was going on during that period of time. It's enlightening for me to see someone has taken and turned their life around and done the things that Ms. Finley has actually done. So I am supportive of Ms. Finley having the opportunity to be released out on home arrest. She has good family support. Her sister is there to support her. She has the support of many of the people there. She's has some support from Piante, which I've been familiar with, and some of the things that they've done in the community. They have, I would probably imagine most of these people are from there that are in here today, but they have been very involved and active in the community. They have been community activists, and I think that with that type of support, that she'll be a successful person and be a well representative out there for us. So I am supportive of Ms. Finley receiving home arrest.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mr. Johnson. Honorable Mr. Neal, anything you wish to add, sir?
Yes, sir, thank you. There's a couple things. It's not about to say I have no intention of diminishing from Ms. Finley's accomplishments while she's been incarcerated. But some of the emphasis in presenting her case, I think, was misdirected, in my opinion. It should have been more directed, more focused on what she's accomplished rather than the age that she was when she committed the crime. Yes, she was young. Yes, she lived in the hood. But I have a problem at 17 years and 9 months of age, when the crime occurred, that there's a whole lot of difference in maturity between that and 3 months later when she'd be 18 years and 1 day old. But the law and the advocates use that as a benchmark. And in my experience, I've seen that the children in the hood, they don't mature properly, but they do mature a lot faster than kids that don't live in the hood, the kids that have more opportunities and everything else like that. But the whole thing is, from my, you know, I grew up here in the Valley. My first wife grew up at 15th Avenue in Atlanta, which is not very far from where this happened. So, but that was back in the 60s. So I'm very familiar with that, but I have seen it way too often that in an effort to survive, people do tend to do things that they think the rest of the community wants to see them do. she did, you know, maturity level, I don't think is as far as the difference between me and a child. I have five children, and the youngest one's 28 years old. So, you know, when you refer to somebody as, you know, people's children, you know, it's a matter of reference. However, also I know from the experience that children's brainwaves do change as they mature, and there are certain things that can happen to them if you don't intervene soon enough. They're messed up all their life unless they put some huge effort into it. So I would like to commend Ms. Finley for everything she's done. I would like to commend the advocates, the Justice Project, and everybody for their work. But one of the things this doesn't bring out to me, and it's nothing the board can do anything about, and, but the advocates might, is more intervention before the children, you know, commit this type of a crime. I've known several people in the last year that were arrested as a juvenile, and it just simply shows a felony arrest, doesn't show any disposition or anything else. And they have a huge problem getting a job. But I do know there's organizations that help the inmates when they're getting out find those jobs that are available. But as far as Ms. Finley is concerned, I'm in favor of a supervised release from jail at this time. She has done tremendously well, way beyond what some inmates do to kind of convince everybody that they've done something. And I would like to commend the advocates and our friends for all the support. I also have had experience as a victim advocate because that grandson murdered. So I can appreciate on the victim side, and that's one thing that was pretty much overlooked until Mr. Kiwanis brought it up, is the one little moment has an attorney eternity involved with it, but that one little moment, there's two eternities involved, the eternity of the victim and the eternity of the offender, and nothing can be done to change the eternity of that victim. So, you know, we all have to remember that. There are children involved and all kinds of ifs that we can't ever, never imagine, opportunities that were never offered to the victims, and the victim was a juvenile. So, you know, I mean, it's all very, very tragic, but I think this family deserves an opportunity to move on with her life, albeit with some supervision at this time, and try to continue, you know, with her steady movement upward and forward and upward. And hopefully, you know, if she's released, she'll go out and become a very strong advocate for the children that in the neighborhood that haven't made that final mistake that puts them behind bars, and maybe even if she just changes one kid's life and prevents them from going to jail, then she definitely served her 25 years and learned from. So I'm definitely in favor of a home arrest type situation.
Thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Neal. Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. And without repeating anything my colleagues have said, I think it was Attorney Wolf who brought up that we haven't had a lot of discussion about the victim in this, in our discussion and in any testimony we've heard today. And one thing Attorney Wolf brought up is that I believe she said that they've had a hard time finding the victim. They've lost contact, so there's no way to contact the victim. So the victim's representatives, and it could be some of them would be here today if they could be found. So, and Ms. Finley herself didn't really talk a lot about the crime, although one of the people that testified for her said she's, I think it was a woman of few words was what they said. And she is. She is a woman of few words. So she's either chosen not to talk about the impact this had on the victim or, you know, is not aware of the impact. I mean, I think she's expressed some remorse to us. She does have amazing community support, and that's a very good thing. The thing that she said that is significant to me is when I asked her what's different about her now, that she wasn't this way when she was 17, and she said, I'm not a follower now. I when somebody tries to make me do something that I know is wrong, I'm not going to do it. And the nature of when she was involved in the gangs, that's what a gang is. It's people that will follow. And it sounds like in her mind she's moved away from that. So that would be my input to this discussion. Thank you, Dr. Wright.
Thank you, Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. Just in a follow discussion by board members, brief comment. I think that we all recognize and sympathize with the victims who are not present, but who's represented by the Maricopa Attorney's Office, and we want to thank Ms. Wolf for her presentation. I also want to thank all of those who are here to speak on behalf and to lend support to Ms. Findlay, especially those who over the years have been involved with Ms. Findlay. And that sends a message. I think, of course, we can never, ever forget the victims. That's something that none of us can forget. I think that Ms. Findlay, at the end of her closing statement, showed emotions at that point. I felt the emotions that she showed regarding the victim at that point, and that to me is significant. I think that, of course, the crime itself, none of us ought to ever forget it. And it should serve as an example for each of us in our own way to protect one another. And we hope that that will happen with all of us. Finally, I think that we all can commend Ms. Findlay, or at least I can commend Ms. Findlay for all of that, the achievements that she's made. Because she's made a number of achievements. We're proud of those achievements that she's made. Getting a GED, getting a couple of AA degrees, being what I would call the supervisor there where she's working at. That sends a message to all of us. We could go on and on, but it's the responsibility of this board at this point to make a decision what should be next for Ms. Findlay, and therefore, I'm going to offer a motion at this point, and my motion is going to be very simple, and that is to grant Ms. Findlay home arrest and deny her a general parole and absolute discharge, and that is, first of my motion at this time.
Second.
Agreed.
Motion by C.T. Wright, seconded by the Honorable Mr. Johnson, agreed by the Honorable Mr. Neal, the Honorable Mr. Gowanus. The Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse, I would point out that as a result of the vote by this board, that Ms. Findlay would be required to follow all mandatory conditions and supervision. She needs assessments. Referrals, that is for counseling, vocation, and education, because she's been incarcerated all of these years. Of course, no alcohol or drug use, random tests for drugs and alcohol. She may not initially operate a motor vehicle because she's been incarcerated. At some point, the PO might ease that one. And that the parole officer is to monitor her financial situation, and she is to have no contact at all with the victim or the victim's family, and she must begin to pay, if she has not already, restitution, and she must begin to, she will have a supervision fee of $65, and that will start 60 days after today. That's when she will begin, because we want to give her an opportunity to, she and her family, to be ready to pay that $65 supervision fee. Is there any other conditions of release that anyone wishes to include? Yes, Honorable Ms.
For the record, we need to ensure that she has 2 months of living expenses that will be provided.
Thank you so very much. Family and to Ms. Findlay, the Department of Corrections requires that you would have 2 months resources for rent and housing and so forth. And you have your family support, you have the support of the community, but that is a requirement. The other thing that I would, just a couple other statements, we did, yes, the motion has already passed, but just a couple other statements that I would make, that just for the record, Ms. Finley would not be released until February 19, 2018, because that's when her that's when she will become eligible for parole. I know that her aunt asked that she would be out for Christmas, but she will not be eligible for parole until February 19, 2018. The second thing that I would say, and we just like to say this from time to time to those who are being released, that we recommend, you don't have to live up to it, that since you're going to be incarcerated until February, please don't go around discussing this with your with other inmates, because many times they get jealous and they force you to end up in trouble, and then this can be rejected. So at this time, just be very careful what you say to others. You know, just say, well, you had a hearing today, and just say whatever you need to say, but don't give anyone an opportunity who might possibly push the envelope and create some problems for you. So at this time, I want to thank all of you for being here. This will end the hearing. Support us that way, and those of you who are victims this way. Thanks so much, and the hearing is over. Thank you.
Thank you.